Peace, friends. I am Erin. I am so tired of hearing my voice on that video. I am so tired of it. Throughout this series that we're in, The Year of Small Things, you might know I'm the co-author of the book of the series that this is based on. I'm also on staff here at Sycamore Creek, where I lead our children's ministry, and I'm a volunteer here on the teaching team as well. And today, we're going to talk about self-care. And you might be looking up at me and saying, like, well, you know, her clothes match, like she's in her 30s, she looks healthy, like healthy kids. What does she know about self-care, right? But the truth is, for the last 20 years, I have had depression and anxiety. And it's the kind where I need medicine to make this happen, okay? I know a thing or two about self-care. And I've read a lot about self-care, and I know enough to know that standing up here and talking about it is kind of taboo in some places. And that's why we're doing it here, to remove that taboo. Usually, when I hear about depression, like from up here or in a Christian book, it comes from one of two very unhelpful, takes one of two very unhelpful paths. And the first is that I don't have enough faith in Jesus. If I only had this much more faith, Jesus would take all my troubles away, right? Maybe it's my problem. Like, I'm just not focused on Jesus at all. Like, maybe my eyes need to be on Jesus, right? This is something that I chose to turn away from. And usually you hear some reactions to that, such as this one. I didn't draw this, by the way. I draw much better than that. But it says, you should do yoga whilst watching the sunrise. It's literally impossible to feel negative and sad while you're appreciating the wonder of the universe. What? What? You don't get it at all. You don't get it at all. If you've ever said that, that's okay. We're going to be healed today of that. I promise you will not say that ever again. So the second way, first, I'm a Debbie Downer, not looking at Jesus. Second way is that my depression is caused by unconfessed sin. So maybe if I just told God about the time I killed that guy out in Reno, God would heal me. I'm not ready to talk to God about that yet. So this is all my own fault, right? I brought this on myself. When you see these, the most dangerous thing is that all of that puts the problem on me, the individual, or you, the individual. It makes it your problem. You go deal with it. And it's very, very isolating. So I told you I read a lot of bad books from Christian authors. Here's one good one. It's called Darkness is My Only Companion. And she captures that. She says, from a theological perspective, the most dangerous thing about mental illness is that it can lock us in ourselves, convincing us that we are indeed on our own and completely on our own, isolated in our own distress. We are isolated, which is the antithesis of the gospel. We are never to be isolated. God created us, and we are here in community. That's what we're doing here today. So, bad news. I don't have a healing pool outside where we're all going to dip and where we're all going to walk away with everything that you came in. No, every ache and pain you had when you walked in here, you'll probably walk out with it too. But I'm hoping that through this, you'll take one small step. That you would take one small step forward in sharing about your health with one other person. And that seems like a very small step. But remember, we've been using this verse from Zechariah throughout this series. And Christians really suck at taking care of themselves. Do not despise these small beginnings, for the Lord rejoices to see the work begin. So, small step toward healing. I like this approach to why I have depression and anxiety. Go way back, Adam and Eve stuff, you know, the apple, the snake, and all that, and, you know, she made a bad choice, and now sin entered the world. And we think of sin like missing the mark, and that's absolutely right. Sin is missing the mark. But it's also a brokenness. Creation broke that day. Creation fell that day. And so things like trees and plants and animals and people, we all die. If things like trees and plants can fall apart and break because of the fall, so too can the cells in our body. So what's happening on my DNA, in whatever way that's broken, that's just something I inherited it. Which, by the way, I didn't know until recently, because we don't talk about mental health enough, especially in our families. So I wouldn't call it like a sin that I've inherited. It's a brokenness that I've inherited. It's part of my gene. It's nothing that I chose. Okay? If you are here today, I've got some bad news, Debbie Downer. There will be some point in your life when you will be unwell. There just will. I'm sorry. And there will probably be a point in your life when you're taking care of someone who is unwell, or you're watching someone who is unwell. And luckily, we have stories in the gospel that can help us understand how we can approach those things better, how we can do a better job of healing. So there's this story in the Gospel of Mark where Jesus is rushing off to heal this dying girl. And there's this crowd following him, and they're like all surrounding him. Things are crazy. And in the middle of that crowd, up comes this woman who has been bleeding for years. Like years. In her culture, that meant she was unclean. She couldn't be around other people. She couldn't be out in the community. She's the very definition of isolated. And here she goes, she takes the risk, and she steps out up to Jesus, and she knew it was Jesus because he wore his halo that day. And she reaches up, and she thinks, if only I can touch the hem of his cloak, I will be healed. And she touches it, and Jesus stops, and he feels the power go out of him, which is a lovely phrase. I don't know what that means. And he says, who was that? And this woman falls on the ground because she realizes, gigs up, right? He knows. He knows I'm unclean and I'm here anyway. But instead, Jesus flips it around and he says, daughter, your faith has made you whole. Go in peace and be whole of your plague. I want Hallmark to make a card that says, be whole of your plague. I would buy it. She steps out in faith and advocates for herself in a way that no one else could. Where are the places that you need to step out and advocate for yourself? Where are those things that's on your mind right now that hurt, or that have been bothering you, that you've been putting off and not wanting to deal with? I've been there too. So if you have depression or anxiety or anything like that, for any long period of time, there will come a point where you say, I am healed. The medicine is working. Look at me. I'm the picture of health. And what do? Stop taking the medicine. Right. But because there's something wrong in my brain, things didn't go really well. So this was right after we had moved from Wisconsin to Michigan. We were living way out in the country. I remember being home alone, trapped in one of the snowiest winters y'all had. It was awful, with all of these children that were my own. And it was a nightmare. And I remember not being able to breathe. It was like this. You can't breathe. Your chest is so tight. And I thought, well, I'm just stressed, right? Like, it's a situation thing. The thing is that even if it's a situation, if you've got all this other stuff going on, you're not going to respond to the situation very well. Not in the same way you would if you were well. So I'm suffering for a while, a year, And one day, my daughter, my oldest, comes out of the bathroom, and she's probably 6 at the time. And she made this card, and she hands it to me. It says, "Dear Mom, I hope you get well soon." I had never told her about depression. I thought I'd been hiding it pretty well. Like, what did she see that I didn't want her to see? And so that's what urged me. That was like, you know, the bump forward to call the doctor, which I did. And she gave me medicine, surprise. And now I am here. I'm feeling well. And I don't think I would have done that if my daughter hadn't mentioned it first. And that's where all y'all come in, okay? You got a job here. Not me, I'm fine. Y'all have jobs to each other, okay? We all belong to each other. There's another story in the gospel, a different gospel. It's the gospel of Luke. And it points to that truth, that sometimes we have to help each other. Jesus is back as the healer, right? He's in this house, he's holding like a free clinic, everyone's coming in, he's healing everybody, the place is packed. There's like a crowd outside, people can't get through. And so here come these 4 men, and they're carrying a mat with a man on it, and he's paralyzed. And they bring him up, and the crowds were too thick, and he couldn't get through, so they went home, and they had some nachos. You're listening. I love you people. Instead, they climbed up on a ladder to the roof, and they made a hole in the roof, and they lowered him down. Jesus surprises us all here when he says, when Jesus saw their faith, he said, "Friend, your sins are forgiven." Jesus saw the friend's faith and healed the man. His sins were forgiven. And here we can get really tripped up, right? Like, it says sin. I told you, once your sins are forgiven, you'll be well. No, don't look at that part. Look at the part where it says, Jesus saw their faith. What was broken in the man has now been made whole. And his friends are probably feeling pretty good about this, right? Like, Jesus didn't yell at him to get at the back of the line. Nobody mentioned the hole in the roof. That's not in there. It's probably in their insurance policy. So they're probably feeling pretty good already. And then Jesus says, "I tell you, get up, take your mat, and go home." And the paralytic man stands up, and he can walk. He's healed. And he's healed because his friends believed he would be. It was based on their faith. We don't know anything about their intentions. The Bible doesn't say it. It doesn't say, like, maybe they showed up at his house and they were like, "Hey, Tony, get on the mat. We're going to take you up somewhere." We don't know. The Bible doesn't say. Like, we don't know. Did the man believe he would be healed? We don't know. All we see is this example of friends carrying him to be made well. And that's what we're doing here together. We belong to each other. This is sort of a radical idea. We are sometimes going to have to step in and take care of someone who can't or won't or doesn't want to take care of themselves. This is the place where we have committed through vows of partnership, which partnership in Sycamore Creek, it's what we call membership. Partnership, you know, membership, it's like a country club. Like, you expect access to the pool and stuff. But a partner instead participates in our mission. So we call it partnership. And if you commit to partnership here, you've taken a vow to be in small groups, to practice some Christian habits, to be here in worship. And it's in those small groups where some of this stuff is probably already happening. If there is something wrong, you're likely to share it at your small group if you feel comfortable. And you might say, "Could you pray for me about this?" And then a week later, someone says, hey, did you ever get that checked out? How's that going? It's that accountability piece that's in there. It matters. Your health matters to us here because we belong to each other as one body. It matters how well Jeremy is when he leads worship. It matters how well your small group leader is doing, and it matters how well whoever's up here is doing, or whoever is up in the kids' room. It matters. And it matters for you guys here too. We belong to each other. Paul, who is a missionary, one of the first missionaries, he wrote a bunch of stuff in the New Testament. He writes this letter to a church in Corinth, and he says, but our bodies have many parts, and God has put each part just where he wants it. You are here because God wanted you here. How strange a body would be if it only had one part. What a weird church we'd be if we only had one person. It's impossible. And he says, yes, there are many parts, but only one body. The eye can never say to the hand, I don't need you. The head can't say to the feet, I don't need you. I can't say at my small group, I'm having problems with something. And when Alice later checks in on me, I can't say, Alice, I don't need that from you. I don't need it. The eye can never say to the hand, I don't need you. God has put the body together such that extra honor and care are given to those parts that have less dignity. Those parts that are especially vulnerable. Those people who are especially hurting. That's where our energy goes. Think about your body. I went running a few weeks ago in the first winter that we had, and I fell on some ice, and I landed right on my hip, okay? There was somebody watching, so I stood up really fast, and I was like, I'm great. I meant to do that as part of my routine. It's great. But for the rest of the week, your muscles start to freak out, and so do your nerves. They get all tingly, and it hurts all the way down to your toes. It aches when you sit on it. In my mind, that's all I can think of, right? I'm holding this conversation with you, but I'm thinking about my hip. My hip's fine now. Don't worry. I'm not thinking about it right now. But that's what it looks like when everything rushes to something that's the most vulnerable. The body tries to protect itself. We try to protect each other. We circle around. And if someone comes to us and they say, I don't think I can do this anymore. I don't think I want to live anymore. Everything stops. Everything stops, and all your energy goes there. Meetings get canceled. Everything on your calendar is canceled. All of your energy goes here because the body protects itself. We are here for each other. Remember, we're really bad at this. But if one part suffers, all the parts suffer. If one part is honored, all the parts are glad. That's my favorite part. Because I've walked along somebody who recently, she had a baby. The baby's healthy and beautiful, but she was not. She was severely, she had severe postpartum anxiety. She couldn't sleep for more than an hour or two at a time. She was doing the not breathing thing. She just wasn't herself. And I mean that in the strongest way possible. And so we got to carry her along on her mat and say, have you called your doctor this week? How's that medicine? Is it working? And she would check back in with us and say, I don't know. But now months and months later, she is well. And we get to look at her and we get to say, I'm so glad you're back. I am so glad that my old friend is back, and she sounds like herself, and she's laughing again. All the parts are glad. All the parts are glad. Here we go back to the problem, though. This is hard, okay? We really, really suck at taking care of ourselves. But we've got to take good care of our bodies to improve the health of the whole body of Christ. Well, great. Easy enough, right? Let's go do it, right? No. I'm going to give you some tips to send you out. Whether you are that person who is unwell today or you are dealing with someone who is unwell, let's take a look at both sides with one verse, the most versatile verse. Puns! I love them! Okay. I have used this verse probably 147 times in the last year. We used it in the Art of Neighboring series. We used it when we were talking about covenantal friendship. You know, love your neighbor as yourself. We love to love our neighbor, don't we? Like, that feels really good to us. When I do something kind for my neighbor, I get warm and fuzzy. That feels good to me. It's that as yourself part. We just kind of want to, you know, breeze over it. Do you love yourself as much as you love your neighbor? Do you love yourself less than you love your neighbor? They're both there. They're both important. So, to love ourselves is to first make that appointment you've been putting off, okay? Call that doctor, call that counselor. You know the thing that's in your head. Just get it taken care of, okay? Your health matters to us. And if you need a counselor, we offer one here at Sycamore Creek. Jackie Himmelwright is our marriage and family therapist. She has office hours here on Monday afternoons and evenings. And she accepts insurance, but if you don't have insurance, we have a fund that will cover the payment for you because it's that important to us that you are well. This afternoon, right after worship downstairs, we have a self-care workshop with Jackie. I'll be downstairs in the library. That's where she's going to dig deeper into a lot of the stuff that we're talking about here. Talk to the professionals. Talk to the people who can help you. And second, stick with those habits. And you'll notice that's like in capital letters. If you take a partnership class here, Tom will go through why that acronym is there. Nobody here remembers. It's just important. I'm kidding. Habit stands for a lot of Christian practices. It's like worship and coming together and small groups and praying. It's a lot of those things that we do because we're Christian. We participate in the community that way. Take a day of Sabbath. Rest for a whole day. Rest. Guess who didn't do that this week? It's hard. Do it. Do it anyway. I'm taking a nap right after this. And third, ask that friend to hold you accountable. Ask somebody, you know what? I'm really struggling with this. If you see me do X, Y, or Z, will you call me out on it? If will you ask me about this thing that I'm struggling with 3 months from now? Because I know I'm going to be pretty lousy at it myself. Is not going to be something I want to talk about, but you're going to do it to me anyway. You're going to make me face it. Which probably puts us on the other side and we get that like deer in headlights look. You want me to what? I'm sorry, what? If you are on the other side and you're watching someone who is unwell, that verse applies here too. Love your neighbor as yourself. Love your neighbor as much as you love yourself. Okay? Take care of them too. First, practice listening, not problem solving. So if I'm in a small group and Jeremy shares something, I'm not going to jump in and say, Jeremy, have you tried this or this? You know there's an essential oil for that, right? We are to be quiet and listen. It's not in that space where I'm jumping in, I'm trying to fix it. I'm not the one who's going to be fixing it. But I might be the one who later on that week jumps back and says, how's that going? Are you feeling any better? Practice listening. Second, meet those physical needs. This is the casserole stuff. This is the stuff like, let me fold your laundry. Let me organize your house. Let me mow your lawn or shovel your snow. I'll send Dave right over to shovel your snow. Meet those physical needs. Provide some childcare so someone can go to their doctor's appointment. Help them in those ways with your hands and with your presence. And third, the most important and the hardest, remind them that they're not alone. There will be a point where you are struggling and you have been praying about something for so long. You've been in your cave where you've isolated yourself and it's dark and it's warm and there's a blanket there that smells just like you, okay? And God isn't there. Because I've been praying about this thing for so long, right? Where is God? And that's where the friend steps in and says, God is there. Wherever you are struggling, God has never left you. The writer in Hebrews says, God assures us, I'll never let you down. I'll never walk off and leave you. We can boldly say to our friends, God is there, ready to help. Because they're not thinking about that on their own. They're not. You can say, I know you've been struggling with that thing for years, but God has never walked out on you. I know it really, really hurts to see your family member go through that, but God has never left them, and he's never left you. I know you've got that thing that you don't want to tell anybody about, but God knows about it, and he's there, ready to help. God will never walk out on you. He will never leave you. I want to close this out with words from Hebrews 2. It seems appropriate. We've been using Hebrews 13 throughout the whole series. And the writer in Hebrews leaves us with something called a benediction, which is where Violet, my child, says, what's that? And I say, a benediction is like the sending out, okay? It's my last prayer for you to put you out, bless you, so you can bless others. And I'm going to read the words that he ends with here out loud, and I invite you to pray along with me silently. May God, who puts all things together, makes all things whole, who made a lasting mark through the sacrifice of Jesus, the sacrifice of blood that sealed the eternal covenant, who led Jesus, our great shepherd, up and alive from the dead, now put you together, provide you with everything you need to please him. Make us into whatever gives him the most pleasure by means of the sacrifice of Jesus, the Messiah. All glory to Jesus forever and always. And all who agreed said, Amen.